presents
At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
From Tucson, Lowe's Ventana Canyon Resort, the University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program Symposium on Racing. Hammer, good morning. Day three.
Good morning. We're still here. We're at it. Day three. Day two officially, but day three for everyone that got here on Monday.
That's true. It's sort of, you know, we get out ahead of it and get settled in. Monday's always kind of a hybrid day where we're looking forward to the symposium, but at the same time, I got plenty of recapping to do. People just listening to the replay, undoubtedly. You heard Todd Pletcher, and Todd, of course. What year? What graduate? I was going to say class of
88. I stayed a year longer. I'm trying to think we went out at the same time.
Interesting.
So, but yeah, we heard Todd from Todd yesterday. It's moving week for a lot of people. Moving to Florida, moving to Oakland, moving out of here, moving there. So, understandably, that's probably one of the busiest times that trainers have, and probably one of the most anxious times as well. Loading a large stable from point A and tack and everything else and getting it down to point B in good shape. So there's a method to it, and it's, like I said, it's until it's done, it's not done. So understandably, that's why Todd was supervising that, as well as Brad Cox, who was honored yesterday at the Big Sport of Turfdom Award.
Yes.
Was honored here. So, and he was doing some moving as well, so didn't make it. So congratulations to Brad for that.
Well, and in fact, we're going to also talk to an alumni that was recognized yesterday, the Alumni Award, going to Dan Silver. Dan, of course, is currently an exec at Roberts Communication and time at Penn National. As racing director or VP, essentially, and before moving to Roberts, and before that in the communications department at NYRA as well. So Dan, and he was really touched. He I could tell that it meant a lot to him.
Well, sure, and you know, we're everywhere. Our the U of A grads, we've snuck into a lot of locales, a lot of areas in racing here, and a lot of good people come out of here. And I'm proud to say I came out of here, too.
Well, and one of the things we'll do today, we'll feather in some students. And in fact, I think today, Hammer, one thing we haven't talked much about, and we do have to do a little recapping of yesterday and anticipation of today, including, you know, you having your field size, part of the field size conversation, the senior projects, the
capstone projects.
Yeah, talk about that. It's a unique thing, and the kids will have it all. They'll have them all displayed, and it's always been something that, you know, to me was you could tell that, you know, the point of pride and the work that goes into it, and of course in whatever area of expertise or study, the individuals are headed.
Yeah, we didn't have that when we were here. We had, you know, end of the year projects, but they weren't as large and encompassing. It's kind of like a thesis type of thing. So if you're into, you know, breeding and you want to go to New Mexico, you know do your project on New Mexico breeding and do some research and make calls and you know, learn as much as you can here. And then during the seminar, you're able to present what you've done over the past semester or year, and you know, everyone here, all the future possible employers can see you and see what you've done and get a chance to, you know, go up and talk to you and things like that. So all kinds of different projects from my one semester here, jumping in a couple years ago as a adjunct professor. I could see the tension on the students as the capstone time came closer and closer. But, you know, like anything, to get it done, it's the homework theory, as I've mentioned many times. Give them a month, they'll take a month. Give them a week, they take a week. But they have all year, and they scramble at the end like we all do and get it done. And some fabulous presentations are going to take place today by the students. And like I said, a very unique situation where you're presented in front of a bunch of people here that, you know, pretty much are looking to hire. And so it gives you a chance to show your stuff in front of a lot of important people in the business.
In addition, of course, the mentorship program, where you've got the industry's got the unique scenario where students can be grafted onto mentors that are fully involved, in the sport in whatever capacity. That has been a special part of what goes on here. I mean, every college has got and department has got guidance offices and placement offices, but this is a little different.
This is a one-on-one guidance office where students are matched up with industry professionals in all facets of the industry, and they're literally able to communicate on a whatever basis they decide on, daily basis. They'll have meetings throughout the year, and you can really get an in-depth view of the game through a perspective of someone who's in it. And that's one of the why the rate of employment of the students that come out of here is so great, because they've been prepped, they've been exposed, and they've been offered these internships, these partnerships, these mentorship programs. And so anyone out there with that has aspirations of getting into the business, or family members getting into the business, I strongly urge you to contact University of Arizona Industry Program and at least come down for a visit and see what they have. And we hasten to mention, you know, this convention here is open to the public. It's not sealed off. You can come and register and sit in the sessions and listen and actually walk around and, you know, just walk up. Hey, everyone's got the old, got the name tag on. Normally, I'm not big at wearing these things here, but here you have it on. So, you know, you walk up to someone, you look at their name, and you introduce yourself, and you can go right at it. So one of the benefits of having these is A, meeting people that you've talked to on the phone for years but never met. And, you know, people walk up to you and say, hey, how you doing, Rick? How you doing? Listen to you. And I'll do the same thing. Oh, you know, you're Jimmy. And I met Eric Hamelbeck at the counter last night getting something printed. You people assume that we know each other. I said, you know, he goes, hey, Rick, how are you? I'm going, hey, we finally met, you know. Like you've said countless times, you know, Eric. I said, I don't know him. I talked to him. We've emailed back and forth. And so we sat there for, you know, 15, 20 minutes telling stories. So just a great spot to meet people here. They're here. They're available. And anyway, it's wonderful. And you mentioned Lowe's. They've done a great job. And anyone looking to visit Tucson, this is the time of year to do it. Of course, it's wonderful. Unfortunately, we're inside. We get to look out, see beautiful sunsets and saguaros and sunshine. But this is I wish it had taken the extra day. But this is an outside type of time. Play golf, hike, sit by the pool. And this is where you want to stay, Los Ventana. I've stayed a lot of places here, but this is my favorite. It's up, it's away, you want to get away, this is the spot.
It is different because, for somebody like me that, you know, grew up in the Northeast, the whole landscape, and I think I frequently, Doug Reed, I frequently reference it as a moonscape, essentially. And it's just so different when you come out here than this spot at the foothills, the Catalina foothills, as they. In fact, when you go to make a tweet or do anything, and it has your identification of where you are, Catalina foothills is what it says. But it's an interesting town too. I went downtown Monday after the show, and after that experience, was it 2 years ago when we had the bus trip,
the taco tour
that was so much fun, but I had to go down to the Hotel Congress and I had to get this year's calendar. I had to get one of those calendars.
That's great. Then that's the total opposite end of where we are, good 35 minutes away. And from where we're sitting, we can go up to Mount Lemmon, and like, I think it's a 9,000-foot mountain in an hour, be up there.
Wow.
So you, it's one of
snow caps, right?
It's one of the places that you can ski in the morning and then drive down and lay by the pool in the afternoon.
Amazing. It was amazing.
It's a pretty cool spot. So anyway, a little Tucson push here.
Well,
it's a great area to come visit, especially in the wintertime.
And I want to ask you, because I talked to Chuck Simon about it on Monday afternoon. I sent Chuck a picture. In fact, I should put it up. I drove through a section coming back from downtown, Rick, back to Lowe's, and I went by the University of Arizona Agricultural Center, the farm and the ag center, right? Is that essentially what it's known as?
Right. You must have driven up Campbell.
I guess.
Because right near River and Campbell, which is up, which is actually near Rito Racetrack, which is where I had my apartment when I was here, of course, near the racetrack. Yes, that's where the agriculture courses take place. The hands-on, not the agriculture department here at the University of Arizona is very large. And when the program came up 50 years ago, they had to put it somewhere, and obviously it made sense to put it in the agricultural department. Right. Oh, the sign you have, it's spread out. That might be an annex. Hard to tell just from the drive-by, but that could be River Road, or there's an annex out further east of town that they've added. But, animal husbandry, things like that are studied here. Not everyone, in agriculture is in the racetrack industry program,
no.
Obviously. So the agricultural here department here is very renowned.
This sort of took me by surprise, because the first thing I saw were, I mean, they're a huge swath of sheep. Then there were some horses, and then more sheep. And then I had to take a left and kind of go, on the, it was to my left at that point, not much further from this sign. And I immediately sent it to Chuck, and Chuck said that my apartment was right around. He said
so that has to be it. That has to be the one on River. Now, one of the courses, because we were in the ag department, we had to, delve into some of the courses there. And I think to a person, if you asked them, the toughest class given by the toughest teacher was called reproductive physiology. I still remember it. And this guy was not a fan of the racetrack industry program. I can't remember the teacher's name. And we were in there, and he tried to make things as tough as possible on us. But in fact, I remember we got into some tussles, myself and the teacher, over some ways of the way he was teaching. And I remember I said, you know what? I ended up getting a B in there, and that was my way of saying, see you later, bud. But reproductive physiology, right, Doug? One of the greatest classes ever invented. So, talking to Doug Reed here at X.
Yeah, absolutely. I promised Doug that I wanted to get him on.
And anyway, so Doug is an ex-leader of the program here, and came here, and we were just talking about, he just showed me some pictures of the farm, and I was explaining
right.
How, we're in the College of Agriculture, so, there's some stuff, classes in that, and I was explaining how, those of us that were really that interested, we still had to learn about it, and,
absolutely.
And in the end, I'm glad we did.
And it goes both ways. I mean, the business classes, some of the animal students hate some of the business classes, but they've got to learn them, and then some of the other students that might say, well, what do I need to know about, animal physiology or nutrition or things like that, because this business is multifaceted, and if you work on the front side, you still got to know what the horsemen are going through, and if you work on the backstretch, the racing office class is a classic example. Those horses, those students that want to go into training or something say, well, what do I need to know? I said, if you know what the racing office is doing and how they do it, you're going to be better at placing your horses in there and things like that, and what kind of races, are good for your
right.
horses. Yeah, it's important.
Well, I guess it's very well-rounded. You specifically on, quote, horse racing, but you learn about the horse, you learn about everything.
And Doug, we'll take your expertise, the opportunity. Very frequently, we've had parents that know that their son or daughter has interests in the racetrack and in the industry potentially, and they've heard the show, they've heard these visits, they've heard you over the years. Explain how you know the curriculum is structured, because they're obviously the basis. I mean, what percentage of the curriculum is specifically racetrack industry program, and then how much else is elective and requirement that fills out essentially for the degree?
Well, I'm going to talk to a parent rather than a future student, because as a parent myself, and you know, the good thing is they get a good core of the racing industry, but a lot of those classes can apply to any business. And then second to that, there's also about three quarters of their classes that aren't racetrack. So you get a well-rounded education. And you know what? People change careers. People do different things. You know, it's great because, you know, how many people stay in a career in today's world 40, 50 years? So you don't know where your young son or daughter might end up, but they'll get other classes and be well-rounded and be prepared for a lot of other things. And I actually think that's a plus, you know, as opposed to if you went there. You know, when you get to a master's degree, you tend to concentrate all in your field. But as an undergraduate degree, you're going to get all kinds of well-rounded classes, and it makes you a better human being and better in life.
For parents that are listening and are far flung, you know, this is a unique regional part of the country. Obviously, the university with a renowned reputation overall, but you know, sending a kid in some cases, let's say from the East Coast to Arizona, it can be an intimidating and daunting. Talk about the experience that you had as director in terms of shepherding young impressionable and wide-eyed kids away from home, particularly a fairly long plane ride from home.
Well, I think there's two things that I think of immediately. One is I think all the faculty and staff, we're such a small little program, that's a plus. You know, this is a big college, let's face it, but this is a small program.
How many students overall at U of A?
Gosh, I don't know what the count is now, but it's got to be 30,000, 40,000.
I think, in the 30s.
You know, it's got to be in that number, because I know it grew some. But the nice thing is it's a small program. The faculty and staff really encourage the students to be around. We make an office that's very student friendly. We have computers for the students, kind of a lounge area for the students, and we really encourage them to be around. So that's the one thing. But the other thing is, because it's a small program and they all have the same interests, the students take care of students, which is really neat, because you've got a mix of older students, younger students, and they kind of mentor each other, which is really, really fun to see. So it's a tight-knit group in a large environment.
Typically about 30.
Yeah, it varies. Again, depends on a number of things. So it goes up, it oscillates up and down. A lot of it has to do with just timing. You know, I'm sure with the COVID, and that was experience, had to be, that had to be really tough on students and everything. Quite a change. So I'm glad to see things come back to more, if we want to call it, normal.
Well, there has been a pronounced turnover really at the top of the program.
Absolutely.
A couple of which very sadly
a group of unfortunate circumstances that you can't predict in life, and it was I felt really bad for the program, because I'm invested in it, even though I'm no longer with the program. I still try to help them out, the new crew. Luckily I'm down here in Tucson, and I was happy to meet with the staff and Robert and everyone, and try to just give them some advice, because they came into a program that's got great history and great structure, but it lost a lot of the organizational knowledge because of those unfortunate instances. And they were great people, and it's a great loss.
Talk about your transition into a consultancy and seeking business opportunities, and there any variety. We didn't talk last year, but we had talked previously about the transition for you. What's the latest?
It's been your work. Fun. I missed the students, Absolutely, but I don't miss some of the bureaucracy. I also, you know, it's a change time in life where I'm enjoying the change, so I have a variety of clients. I don't have to be kind of full-time person all the time, so, you know, there's on and off periods, which is nice. I've been very, very fortunate because, you know, having been in the business as long as I have, the contacts I have, a lot of the business has just been because of people I know or people know me and vice versa. I've also done some work for Spectrum Gaming Group, which has been a good relationship because they have strengths in gaming. I have strengths in the horse racing and parimutuel. And when they have projects that include that, they kind of call on me. So it's been fun. The biggest project this year was actually most of it was done last year. It was the New York project that Spectrum did. I did most of the parimutuel work on that. And it was released in January, even though it was done, you know, in 2020. I've had a few other small projects, and they vary, and it's kind of fun to see the variety of stuff that happens, and sometimes it's a real small project, sometimes they're large.
You know, Doug mentions his, you know, continuing onto a consulting job and basically depending on the people that you met throughout the industry, which we were kind of stressing earlier, the students that they get to meet, you know, their future employers, and just meet Great. People in the game. And that's what this game's all about. And that's why it's so important for everybody, people in the game, to be here, to
Absolutely.
Meet people. You're just shaking hands. I'm meeting people that I've known but I've never met. And, you know, when you go out, this game's all about communication. You need to find something. You need
to. It really is amazing because I totally agree. My strongest asset, I believe, when I came here, was the contacts I already had because I had worked at many racetracks around the country and, you know, knew people in the Midwest, the East Coast, and everything. So I think that was an asset to the program. But an asset to me was all the people I met here and continued to meet. And, you know, the students, boy, we tell them, you got to be here. This is, you know, 1 week of the semester, you have to be up here. It's so, we stress it's so important because, you know, even my job today, it's a great asset. I can, if I have a consulting job and I need some information, you know, I know Rick, I know you, I know lots of people. And it's so much easier to call Rick and say, Rick, I need something out of Oaklawn Park or whatever. And he's right there because he knows me. I know I'm going to get it quicker than if some stranger calls. And Rick goes, ah, you know.
No, 100%. And you know, you hear that over and over, networking, 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 but this is the ultimate networking business.
But you do both. You're networking, but you're also learning. Because every session and every conversation I have, I learn some. I've learned several things, you know, this week, just talking to people or being in a session. It's like, oh, learn something new today.
Well, speaking of which, let's actually touch on Hammer before you have to go to this pre-meeting. And Dick Powell's going to join us shortly. And of course, they're at Happy Valley right now. Still, I think one to run at Happy Valley, and they've been running the Jockey Challenge, and I think the last Jockey Challenge race just went. Just that eighth was, I think, the last. Miguel,
did Dick sleep on that little chair last night watching these races?
Maybe he might have been here. I didn't notice actually when he may have been prone when I came down. But I know Miguel Barcelona, I think, just won this last race at a squared number for John Size Elan 12-1 on the tote. So we'll get some of that from Dick. But yesterday, a couple of quick hits and thoughts. Rick, I don't know which of among the presentations you were in on. We basically it was the HISA show yesterday as their two committees essentially made their presentations. Talking about you know, how they're structured and their preparedness toward July 1st of next year, and I mean, to be honest, the preparedness portion is up in the air. None of the things that came up here already the last couple of days, we didn't know much more. So. Doug, what did you sit in on, and what was your impressions?
Well, the because I don't consult in the, you know, the medication area and all that, while I sat in on some of it, I haven't, to be totally honest, immersed myself in the HISAs. It's important, and by me saying I didn't immerse myself doesn't mean it's not important. It's extremely important. I know how important the safety and welfare is. It's one of the most important things the industry is facing. But again, it's not, I don't profess to be an expert at everything, and nobody is in this business. And so, but I did sit in a number of sessions, and, you know, everything is good. I'll tell you, maybe my favorite was, I think Robert did a great job of getting Keeneland and Stronach Group and Del Mar and Naira together talking about the industry from the racetrack side of it. And I thought that was a refreshing and a well-put-together panel. And, you know, it was nice to hear, you know, some of their perspectives and the diversity of that panel and the fact that, you know, they're doing things. And that's been one of my frustrations is, you know, sometimes you know, we are critical of ourselves, rightfully so, but a lot's being done right now. It does take time, and I think a lot of the people, you know, customers or people in the industry, it's a frustration, but they've got to realize change doesn't come quick, unfortunately, because I love change. I think we ought to experiment more. But I heard those speakers, and they were talking about doing some new things using technology, and I think they're spot on. I just hope they continue to carry through with what they said.
Well, and that group that you referenced included Shannon Arvin, the relatively new head at Keeneland, Craig Fravel subbing for Aiden Butler. And speaking of which, Butler apparently at Laurel involved, immersed in the fiasco there. They have canceled racing again for this weekend. They're shooting for a week from Thursday to resume racing. And I did see Tim Keith here yesterday with Alan Foreman. And, of course, Tim, the head of the Maryland Horsemen. And they are understanding, but they are beside themselves over the situation. Josh Rubenstein here from Del Mar, and Dave O'Rourke from Naira. Dave, kind of as part of the conversation, he talked about some of the long-term renovation projects and things that are going to ultimately transform Belmont long-term. You know, the first order of business was the opening of the hockey arena, of course. But it had Charlie Hayward moderating, and you know, everybody basically talked about, you know, their hopes and dreams and what they're trying to do long term. What about Rick, for you yesterday as part of the presentation?
Yeah, well, we had a little preview of the HISA in our racing secretary meeting the day before,
right.
So I had heard it was almost like a rehearsal for them to say what they were going to say in front of us. So I was in and out of that. I didn't listen to too much because it was some repeat that I had, and you know, I give them credit for coming here and speaking to the industry, and you know, it's a tough thing to do anytime we want to change the color from blue to red. There's oh my gosh, we can't
yes.
do that. So you know, there's opposition, which is healthy, as long as the talk is constructive. And at the end, I'm hoping they will listen to some of the comments that some of the industry experts you know, countered on. Some of the things that look impossible to do maybe need to be altered. And so the give and take, I was in and out of that meeting. Doug mentioned his meeting, and I was in and out of that too, because I had some micro meetings myself with a few people. And you know, it's encouraging to hear that. And Doug hit this. We talked about it last year here and many times here. It's great to come here and talk about stuff, but if you leave and don't do anything,
exactly.
And one of the things that I'm talking about this morning in the field size, what a tremendous topic. I mean, it's just booming with excitement. But I have one of the things I'm going to say is, you know, the solution is simple. It's all about the execution. You can talk about it all we want, but if we don't follow through, it's like a football play. You can draw it up on the chalkboard, but if you don't do it, it doesn't mean anything.
Well, I'll defend one thing you know, when we were here as faculty, Wendy, Steve, and I, we would talk about it, and rightfully so, some things don't get done. But there's a lot of things that happened here that do get done. We actually sat down one time and looked at the different panels over the years, and I think we got up there and tried to, you know, kind of But it's true. There's a lot of little things that come out of here, and I know for a fact that started here and happened. You know, like some of the uniform medication things started here with a major, a day before the conference, everyone was in that room, and out of that came a lot of uniformity and the model rules and things like that. Little things like the dime supers, whether you like them or not, actually came out of here because of the New Zealanders here talking about, you know, fractional wagering and all. And that wasn't fractional wagering, but it was a modification of that. And I could go on and on if I had my cheat sheet, you know, and of the things we put together. But there's a lot of little things, and they build on each other.
Absolutely.
Well, and not just the things that go on inside the ballrooms here.
Good point.
We're talking about individual relationships that are made
true.
And then
good.
Go off and do
Real
something on your own that, you know, you don't hear about. That's the stuff that is wonderful about
it. A lot of deals are made here.
Exactly. Well, you see two guys talking to each other, you know something's going on over there. And so that's the importance of just showing up. They used to say, just sign your name as half the deal. Well, just show up to these things and you're ahead.
Well, and there's also the influence factor. You know, the people that are working throughout the game, and they hear something, and it makes an impression and stays with them when they go back to their racetrack or whatever capacity. And if it has the potential to influence their decision making going forward. And so you may not see something glaring and immediate, but it has that kind of influence, whether it's somebody that goes back and makes an attempt to lower takeout or what, you know.
Good point. I mean, I used to, when I was in management, I proudly would say, I'm not shy to steal a good idea. And I would tell students that when I taught here. I said, you know, it's nothing wrong with stealing a good idea. You know, if someone else, you know, I've done it myself. I know a lot of them ideas have been stolen from here, so to speak. And I say that, you know, in fun.
And anybody making a presentation is happy to have their suggestion, co-opted that way.
Right, and modified into
some
way.
To the jurisdiction that fits.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. No, so that's, we have to keep going over this, but that is just, that's what this whole thing is about.
Yeah, and there are some things that fall flat. That happens, too. I mean, I'm not saying the world's perfect either, but there's a lot of little things that happen out of here that I know directly came, you know, started, or maybe a catalyst, let's put it.
Well, that's the perfect word for it. A catalyst for influence and potential change and improvement, no doubt.
Now today, after we do our field size talk, which I guess is
my favorite topic Rick, as an ex-racing secretary.
It's endless. It's endless. There are some macro things you can do, but immediately following that is the. There's going to be a topic and a panel on the fixed odds,
right?
Which is coming and
exciting stuff.
That's something. I hope the room is packed because
this is
news to all of us. We all need to hear from these experts that are all going to speak on it, because not only do we need to embrace some of the companies that are doing that, bet makers,
I think we've got 30 some states now, have lost count. It's happened so fast, that have approved some form of sports wagering.
I
guess, you know, if I have a tiny pet peeve at horse racing, it's that they haven't been at the table as much as I think they should be. You know, horse racing is a sport, in my opinion, and I feel very strongly about that. And it's like we now allow sports wagering. Well, horse racing is a sport. What, you know, there's got to be some kind of synergy there and some kind of overlap, you know, with that, whether it be pari-mutuel or fixed odds with both sports and with both horse racing. And I say that they're the same thing.
Well, we were encouraged by Mr. Rooney yesterday, Tom Rooney, as he gave his introductory speech, keynote address yesterday, and he mentioned that. Mm-hmm. He said, we're going to embrace it. We need to embrace it. We need to be on the same page. We're next to basketball, football, horse racing.
Exactly.
When people go to hit their button on the kiosk.
And there's a lot of things you can offer and see what the customer wants, you know, the most. And there's a lot of things you can experiment with if you can do all that. I mean, it's a great opportunity, and I don't know what experiment's going to be the best one, but if you try some things, some are going to work and some aren't.
Doug, how do people contact you? Give the contact points.
Well, I guess DougReed27@gmail is the easiest.
That's it, right?
So, yep, I'm happy to be contacted, even if it's just a phone call and they just want to pick my brain. And you know, I love talking horse racing, so that's one reason I love coming back here, you know, every year, even though I'm not part of the program. I feel like I still am and try to help them as much as I can, and I love seeing everybody here.
Well, when it comes to operation, when it comes to working with state government for licensing,
exactly. That's I've been your, involved that, in a
that's
number
your
of licenses.
Major
one
expertise.
Of my other favorite things is working with strategy and innovation. You know, people have to sit back sometimes and take the time, and I know a lot of organizations do, but sometimes, you know, you got the day-to-day fires to put out, but you also got a plan, and strategy and planning is, it's, I mean, I even taught a course on that, and I've done it, I've lived it. I think it's part of the reason the program has been successful over the years. The team we had put together here, we took time out and did strategic planning and all, and a lot of the things we planned, we carried out and happened, and they've been successful programs. So that's another area. That's, again, an area I love, you know.
Doug Reed, the longtime director of the program here, and now back in private practice, essentially. Always great to see Doug, and just I am saddened that the citation email, right? You had citation.
At citation 27 is my Twitter.
Okay,
that's where you got citation.
That's where I, because I knew you.
And citation was our dog of many years, and we called him Cy for short.
I love it. I that's great. Number one that you named the dog after citation. But that sticks in my head. You know, it's funny when it comes to Twitter handles. There's certain, you know, some people don't use their name and they've got, you know, some other moniker, and some of them stick in your head. And other times I got to go search.
That's funny.
For you know, whatever their address is, no matter how many times I use it. But that the citation sticks in my head with you. It's very funny.
Well, great being here, and you guys do a great job. I enjoy it.
Doug, thanks so much. Doug Reed, everybody. It's good. I'd leave it on. We'll get the opportunity to slide Dick Powell in, and you.
I'm going to step away. We've got to do our little prep before we go on stage here and give our presentation. But let's give a little tease, or more than a tease.
Yes.
Before we get going, that we'll open officially. Officially, the calendar giveaway will officially open right now. And so those of you in the past know that we like to give away calendars. And this year, again, of course, the calendar will be provided by Oakland Racing Resort Casino. Oakland Racing Casino Resort.
Thank you.
That's the first time I blew it.
It's so tough.
So what we need to do, we always ask everyone to do a little something, to have a little fun with it. So this year, for the first 400 that email in, we're asking you to send a picture of your favorite or oldest or any kind of souvenir that you have picked up along the way of your travels, anywhere, anything, a keychain, a hat, a too small t-shirt, anything that's sitting on the shelf or in a drawer. Take a picture, give us a little story about it. Send it along to oaklawncalendar@yahoo.com, oaklawncalendar@yahoo.com. And I'm going to be more strict than normal. I really want to see the pictures and the stories. I will find a place out there in Twitter land to post the pictures.
Well, what about the cat.
Well, it's Sleeping Coco.
Sleeping Coco is just as good.
No, I still have the cats out there. So either I'll add to that, or I'll make a new handle or something
like
that.
So, all right.
So anyway, officially today, we'll re-up this again on Friday when we come out. So get the souvenir. Now, this is one thing. We did the sleeping pets last year, and of course, not everybody has a pet, but I guarantee it, everyone's got a souvenir. So take a picture. Tell us a story. We'll get an Oakland calendar out to you, and let's have a little fun and get that thing going.
Make sure you spell calendar right. We've had a number of people over the years say, I haven't gotten my calendar. I haven't got my calendar. And
E between two A's. There's two A's and one E in the middle.
It's very funny. And then they'll forward their email, and I'll see that they spelled calendar with an E.
Right,
and so I'll say, Wait a minute. This is why you didn't get it, because we didn't hear from you. So it's.
And unfortunately, Steve came early and left town, so he's not going to be helping in the.
I'll be back in February, but it might be too late for February.
Right. So anyway, well, let's get that going. We'll re-announce it again on Friday at the usual time, but you can get going with that. So I know people right now are going through their closets, and so make it fun, make it interesting, and we're going to hand things over to Dick Powell.
Dick Powell, who just actually gave us a souvenir of the symposium, a symposium hat that I've got RTIP hats at home, but this is that great logo of the horse and rider with your pen. Hammer sat down with a pen and then it disappeared. You got? Actually, take that and keep that. Here's a souvenir. There you go. It's a cross pen from years ago. There you go, Dick. But that's it. You good? Steve May, of course. Steve May, one of the great stories of at the races with RTIP, because he literally was driving in the car, found the show on the radio in like 2006, and then looked into the program and came here, changed the direction of his career, and...
Where's my laptop?
Oh, my God, Dick.
Did he just walk away?
Yeah, he did. He probably did.
You grab my laptop?
Is that yours? So it's, somehow Hammer managed to... He managed to... This is so great. He managed to convey a pen, needing a pen, into stealing a MacBook. Very, very talented. That is funny. Dick, good morning.
Morning, Steve.
Welcome back. I don't know how many times half a dozen now, five times maybe?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Casey sent me a tote. He says, oh, should I call Dick Powell? Yeah. I said, no, he's right here.
I thought of today, I'm in my room, and I said, should I bring my headphones down? Are they going to call me, or should I call them?
No, he asked that question.
I was going through the same thing.
And you've actually been taking advantage of the RTN Roberts Communication booth, because the Hong Kong action continues. Yep. We've got the
ninth is coming up.
And that was I was watching early this morning. I watched races two and three, and Marrero was off to a good start. I kind of missed the middle portion of the card, and I just saw where Miguel Barcelona won the last race.
He won the last race. The four International Jockey Challenge races, race four, number eight, Awesome Treasure, Tom Marquand, Alexi Bedell, Zach Purton. So they go 12 points, 6 points, 4 points. The fifth race, Holly Doyle from post 12, going two turns, guns the horse, sits first over, gets him to switch off. And then when it looks like she's going to get swallowed up in the stretch, she's just throwing crosses, and she winds up winning. Glorious Love is second with Zach Purton. So Zach is in the money the first two races. Al won, Ryan Moore third. The next leg was Invincible Music with James McDonald. He noses out Zach Purton. You see a trend here, Zach Purton. And Joe ran third with Red Majesty. And then the last leg, the eight, Elon, Mikhail Barcelona, Zach Purton gets second, Ryan Moore third. So on the basis of 3 seconds and a third, Zach Purton is the 2021 International Champion Jockey. The races were, as always, right down to the wire and super finishes.
We've talked to various riders who have participated in those international competitions, and you're kind of at the mercy of the horse they plop you on.
Yeah, and a lot of them paid, you know, decent money, 21, 20-1, 10-1, stuff like that. Last year, Holly had a sprinter that really couldn't lose. I mean, just had a big class edge. But this year, I didn't see any of those type horses, and the race she won was just a sensational ride. So the winners never had another placing. So you get 12 points to win, and yet none of the four winners came back with the in-the-money finish. So Zach just kept piling up points, as he's known to do. He's the 2021 champion jockey.
What do they get? The little cash prize? There's got to be I
heard her saying $500,000 Hong Kong dollars, and he had a
like $50,000.
$500,000 Hong Kong. So you divide that by seven.
So I was going to say ten. All right, so seven.
67,000.
Nice. Well,
and then he had a whip, but it wasn't a golden whip like they have in Dubai and stuff. And then he had, obviously, a giant trophy and stuff. So, yeah.
Nice.
Sure, he did well. I don't know if they had other prizes with sponsors. Oh, they had the Longines stuff. So, I'm sure.
That's get a watch great. Out of it. A guy like Zach Burton, probably with Longines, probably got himself a pawn shop in his bureau with all the watches they give away.
Yeah, what's the word? Ubiquitous?
They've been a wonderful
addition. Oh, yeah, but they're...
addition,
they're,
right?
They're,
I mean,
they are everywhere.
famous for many years for their baseball scoreboard presence, right? The Longines clock and many of Ebbets Field, I think, and at Shea and others. Well, the activity leading toward Saturday night, Sunday morning, and I'm just going through my stack here that I've saved. You're going to be so impressed. There we go. Wanted to make sure to have the international races at my disposal, and I don't have the. I actually did not get the draw from the other day, but I've got the participants and everybody there. There's been tremendous coverage, particularly for the Japanese runners that are invading.
They have shown up strong, deep, talented. We all know Love's Only You based on her Breeders' Cup filly mare turf win, and she's back. She won in Hong Kong in April, so obviously she can handle the track. She likes firm going, and she's going to get that, and she looks awfully tough.
You want to do this first before we talk the symposium issues?
Oh, sure, yeah.
Okay, then let's dive into the let's give everybody the timing, first of all, that we can look forward to. Race timings.
I don't know if they've done the draw yet, Steve. I think they do that tomorrow morning.
Okay.
Where they actually have the race sequence and timing and morning line odds and things like that.
Very good.
Post positions.
All right. Then we will have to.
We know who's running and we know who's riding, but we just don't know where they're going to draw.
All right. Then. So I thought they were doing that on Tuesday. I'm sort of losing track of the days, to be honest. But all right. In that case, let's just walk through the. Let's walk through the four races. I know where you want to start. You want to start with the Cup?
Let's see. I got the
five. We're of course loves. Only You. It said this to you a couple of weeks ago. Her presence is got to enhance North American interest. I mean, I don't think. I'm not gonna. I don't know who to suggest. Who do you think the most recent Breeders' Cup participant from an international basis that captured North American fans? As much as Love's Only You did.
Boy, not for a while.
Jeez. Right? Yeah. It's a Ouija board kind of a scenario. Goldakova, I think it took the repeat and then the third for people to be completely captivated, even though in so many ways with Freddie Head it was an amazing story. But yeah, I mean, Ouija board was a great story because of Lord Derby and how much fun he was having. I mean, interchangeable, Ouija board or Goldakova.
To show you how game some of these owners are, and Lord Derby's an example, he took Ouija board to the Japan Cup. and, you know, runs into Deep Impact. You know, just but he still showed up and, you know, ran second and ran great, and Deep Impact was on a roll after the Arc de Triomphe. He had two starts and he crushed both of them. But he's going, you know, Snow Fairy. A lot of these horses show up late in the year, whether it's Japan or Hong Kong, and there's big races available. And I give these owners and trainers and connections, especially now with some of the uncertainty about going and you're going to get out of there and come home. This is just sensational. So the Japanese this year really shown up. I mean, they do every year, but this looks like one of the strongest contingents. So the Cup is going to be run at 2,400 meters, a mile and a half, and... Nope, I'm wrong. 2,000 meters, okay. And I don't see... I just don't see anyone beating Love's Only You. She's done this so many times, you know, the shipping and the travel. And some horses actually enjoy it. Some get sour in their stalls and stuff like that and getting out and about. Some boys just put them in a van and take them for a ride, and they feel tremendous.
The famous broad brush with Dickie Small. Dickie, even if he was running out of his own stall, Dickie would put him on the van in the afternoon and drive him around so he thought he was being shipped somewhere.
Yes, absolutely. So Love's Only You has been to Hong Kong, has been to Dubai for the Shima Classic, has been to America for the Breeders' Cup Filly Mare Turf, now back to Hong Kong, and then in between was back to Japan. And she just looks, I don't see any slowing down. When you look at these mares that are being put into sales, I know most of these horses will not go to sales because of they're already in the Japanese market, so the Japanese aren't going to give them up, as valuable as they are. But God, what she would bring. So I don't see her getting beat in here, Steve. So then it's the question. All right, who do you like for second? And I like Lei Papal.
Another Japanese.
Yeah, and Christophe Soumillon. She does have pace. Not a closer or, you know, a grinder or anything else like that. She's had some really good races this year, including a Group 1 back in April. That was going 2,000 meters, and she raced a little bit longer than that, 2,200 meters. But she was in against Chronogenesis and top horses. She had the Queen Elizabeth II on November 14th. Didn't run that well, but still beaten 2 1/8 lengths, so it was just under 3 lengths. And that was 2,000, good to firm. She'll probably get good to firm coming up. And Christophe Soumillon, who has a lot of experience at Hong Kong. Christophe knows his way around Hong Kong, so he can get over Happy Valley no problem. I think she'll be maybe the one to catch. I don't know if Soumillon's going to slow the pace down or not, but I hope he just has a strong pace, stretches him out, and, you know, make that cut to corner turning for home and see how long she can hang on. But Love's Only You will probably be in the stalking position. And when you look at the Breeders' Cup, Steve, we all look for traffic, you know, in behind traffic, you know, in behind horses, slam the brakes on, things like that. That's a bad trip. But one of the worst trips is to race in between horses. It just takes so much out of a horse to have a horse inside, horse on the outside that you don't want to let get past. And Love's Only You just had this remarkable trip in the Breeders' Cup where she was under pressure for the last 5 furlongs. And for her to, in the final furlong, just like split horses and reaching out and grabbing, that was just remarkable. So I don't see her again beat. I'll go with the other Japanese, Lei Papal, and then Kai Ying Star representing the local contingent.
And the Cup, the first of the four that we'll talk about. And Dick, about 4 minutes, it looks like, to that ninth. Did you have any suggestions?
No, because I wasn't able to.
Well, it's a big. You got a big heavy favorite, 3-2. He's remarkable for Frankie Lohr and Vincent Ho. 3-2 on the outside. 12 horse. Fafa. He's remarkable. I should say Fafa is the my granddaughter calls me Papa.
Yes,
Papa.
Oh, I'm Papi.
All right.
I'm El Papi the Tutti Papi.
Let's turn to the mile. And you've got some familiar runners in here in terms of international campaigners, including Mother Earth, who has made the trips to the U.S., but Golden 60, an imposing presence wherever.
I'm going to try to beat him.
Oh, look at you.
And they've handled him differently coming into this race. He only had the one prep. It was a very slow-paced race where he just flew home. And he didn't have, last year he had more racing going into this race. That can indicate they're looking at perhaps a longer, more challenging season, and they don't want to spend too many bullets or expend too much energy this time of year. But his races are such that he does enough to win. He's not a dominant horse. And I think Danan Kingley from Japan is going to be super tough. And the form line that I'm using is back in June, he won the Yasuda Kinnan going a mile. He did it from post 11. The mile was 131.7, and he beat Gran Allegria. Now, Gran Allegria is this monster mile horse in Japan who rallies from miles behind in the stretch, just like passes horses like he's in a different race. So Danan Kingley held him off. Big, big win. Then he came back in October as his kind of prep for this, and he carried 128 pounds going a mile and a furlong, which went in 144 and change, and he missed that by a head to Schnellmeister. So he's been in tough. He's a five-year-old that has tremendous form. He's the right connections, and he's a deep impact. So that's enough to sell me. So I'm looking at him working out a trip. Golden 60 can just explode when Vincent Hull wants him to, and then it's a matter of if they hook up last 100, 200 meters, who will prevail. So I think at the price, Golden 60 is just, you either watch the race and root for him, or you make a bet and try to beat him. So I'm going to try to beat him. I'll probably play Danan Kingley to win and then make a saver Golden 60 on top of Danan Kingley.
Well, I tell you, the Kawada also, Kawada is riding Loves Only You, and so maybe poised for a big evening. Let's turn, Dick, to the sprint. And this one, probably a little, this group, a little bit less familiar for the North American audience.
Well, and it's an emerging domestic group that a lot of these Courier Wonder and Abu Attack are just getting up to the top level. So it's not like they've been there for a while and they've become familiar. But at the same time, they're immensely talented. And they kind of needed a change in that generation of sprinters over there. So that's worked out well. The Japanese contingent is also very, very strong. But the locals have won 6 out of the last 7 sprints.
Hmm.
So it's good. And the Japanese won last year with Dan and Smish. But as good as the
Who is back this year?
Yes. And as good as that group is, I'm favoring the locals, and I am favoring Nabu Attack. He's at his put up or shut up moment. He looked like he was a world beater. Then he might have stubbed his toe a little bit. Not bad though. Then he had the one bad race, 2 back, recovered nicely last time. And when you go through his sectional times in his races, he can come home in 21 and change. I'm just flipping a switch. He's a gigantic horse. He's 1,360 pounds, if not more. And yet, he's pretty nimble. He doesn't have to be on the far outside. I mean, he's past his horses on the inside, things like that. So, yeah, he'll drop back. He won't be anywhere near the lead. But I think we're going to have a hotly contested pace up front. And I think he can just sit back there and then wait and either see if there's a opening up the inside, or just swing out and have that giant over-the-top move that you see all the time at Sha-Tin. Like I say, the 43 change his last half, 21. And the other day he worked out, and it was the typical, you know, just go out and jog, finish up. So he goes out and jogs like 27, 28, 21.7. It's that acceleration is there anytime the rider wants it. So I think he's ready. I think he's been prepped well. I don't think David Hayes is, you know, he's really pulled out all the stops for this. And I really think he's a legitimate horse. He's beaten many of the domestic horses already. So, but he has upside where some of our older sprinters, you know, what they've done is what the best you're ever going to see. So Naboo Attack on top. And then underneath between Lucky Patch, who is just an amazing horse who keeps developing. He's had three 107 and change, six furlong wins at Hong Kong in the last year and change. I mean, just when he's on, he's just brilliant. Naboo Attack beat him earlier this season.
He's beat him repeatedly, actually. He's been finished in front of him.
But he wins, and when he wins, it's blazing fast. So we'll see what the turf condition is Saturday night, Sunday morning. I think the firmer the better for Lucky Patch. And then the horse, let's say the horse to beat is Pixie Knight, the three-year-old from Japan. I mean, he just has tremendous form lines, and you think he's only three, and he's doing what he's doing. Now, I know when you look at these races, you got to understand Japanese running times are faster than Hong Kong. Their turf gets real firm. So you'll see 107. What do you run? 107.20 was last start?
Yeah.
A crazy number. And that's, you'll see mile races in 31. And they're all legit, but they get really firm ground. So Pixie Knight will get the conditions he likes. Maybe, no, Sha-Tin has a pretty wide turn, so the turn shouldn't bother him at all. And he's 3 years old. He's another one with an upside. We'll see how he can handle his trip to Hong Kong. But I like Naboo Attack.
What kind of price do you expect on Naboo Attack?
6-7-1.
Okay.
I'm hoping.
I certainly can't turn the page without also noting the return of Hot King Prawn, who just is like a perennial. He just is always showing up.
Yeah.
Always.
No, they have. They
7 years old.
They develop these sprinters, and they have so much opportunity to race, whether it's group races, whether it's high-level handicap races. So, and if you notice in Hong Kong, most of the horses come back in less than a month, usually 3 weeks. And part of that is they have so many therapeutic means, so swimming and all sorts of things to keep horses sound and happy. And happy gets underestimated. Sound is really important, but happy is really important.
No doubt.
So the horses that go to Chung Fa, I mean, Chung Fa is such a handicap and angle that every day they give you a list of all the horses who have been in Chung Fa since their last race. So if you're shipping in from Chung Fa, they're letting you know that, because that's a positive. Horses go up there, and it's 3 hours away. It's out of the city. They seem to thrive in that. So the older horses tend to benefit because they just get to do lots of things, or round pen work and lots of barrier trials where they get, you know, good exercise and things like that. So, yeah, Hot King Prawn will be good. And I do this thing that is published on the Pollock Report. And this week, right, I picked Naboo Attack before the draw or anything else like that. And I said, fasten your seatbelt, because this race is not going to be decided in the last three strides.
Looking forward to it. That gets us to the mile and a half Vaz. And this is a fun group, because you've got a little bit more of an international melange.
Yes. Me not being very smart, I figured in the Vaz, I'll go with Glory Vaz. You know, that sounds like a logical thing. Just fits these conditions, can get the distance, which we always want to see going this distance. And the the mile and a half race will start farther down past the finish line, come up, hit the finish line, and then make the one lap around. So you should have plenty of time to settle things out. It's not the greatest race, to be honest with you, on the card. And some of the distance races over there just seem to be down in quality. So in those conditions, I don't mind taking a shipper, and I'm looking for it now because I get this all.
Well, and among the shippers, Ibira, the Distorted Humor, Philly for Alain Deroyer Dupre. You've got Mogul showing up here for Aidan O'Brien. So there's no shortage. You mentioned Glory Vaz, Pile Driver. Yes. I think is going to be well known to North American audiences as well. So you've got a nice group in here to. France and UK and Japan and Hong Kong.
And Glory Vaz's form line is a second beaten less than a length by Love's Only You, two starts back in QE2 in April. Ran well last time. It was a group two. And looks like he's just being brought up for this race. He raced in it last year, and he won by 3.5 lengths. He got a deep impact again. And funny, you see the Broodmare Sire here, Steve, swept overboard?
Oh, yeah, sure.
And he was, you know, Japan was buying up a lot of American stallions, and yet they bought Swept Overboard, they bought End Sweep, they did buy Stone Cold Sprinters, and he was one of them. So as a Broodmare Sire, he's obviously producing good horses, including this one.
I bet Swept Overboard in the Breeders' Cup.
What did he pay in the Met Mile? 60-1?
I don't think I bet him in the Met Mile, but I did bet him in the Breeders' Cup. That I remember, and I think he was he fourth? Is he fourth or fifth? I think disappointed.
All I remember is he's always coming. He was a come-from-behind sprinter that could make up tons of ground. And is this Alain Deroyer Dupre's last race?
It's got to be getting...
I don't know what else he would have in France.
That's a great point. That's a great point.
Ibira, nothing wrong. A good second, a length behind Broom. Broom can run all day, as we saw in the Breeders' Cup Turf, where he almost won that. And then a couple of wins in between against lesser company, but... the man's a genius. I mean, he absolutely is. And he shows up, and he has Christophe Soumillon, Aga Khan Silks, and Distorted Humor as the sire. That's like, which doesn't belong and why. Distorted Humor as the sire of a mile-and-a-half turf horse for the Aga Khan. So that's kind of striking. But, yeah, she'll get the distance. And I think she's been on heavy ground, soft ground most of the time in France, and now she's going to get firm ground, and sometimes these horses just thrive on it. So I'm looking forward to run a big race and get in the money underneath Glory Vaz.
The HKIR, the Hong Kong International Races, and we'll get you for Friday. We'll make sure everybody, when we do weekend preview, we'll probably get a couple more final opinions in and give you all the specifics. And, Dick, that takes us to a wider discussion of the activities here. And you and I are of a similar mind when it comes to what HISA represents, at least in the format that has been presented thus far. Your thoughts about what we heard yesterday and any of the other presentations that went on here in the last 24 hours?
Well, I don't think HISA helped themselves. I think there are a lot of questions coming in. And on December 7th, 2021, you can't keep saying, oh, yeah, no, we want your feedback. We want your feedback. Where was the feedback while all this was being developed?
Well, apparently behind the scenes, apparently out of view, which is a little unusual considering that this was supposed to be something that was trumping transparency and openness.
So a bad idea can get shot down in 5 seconds. No, next, move on. One of the things that came up yesterday was if you weren't compliant with the racetrack accreditation, you were not going to be able to do simulcasting. And I was like, did she really just say that? And Eric Hamelbeck got up, and Eric was very calm and measured and questioned that and just, you know, you're going to violate the Interstate Horse Racing Act. You've given horsemen these rights over the years to protect them, and now you're just going to say, no, you're not good enough. And that was an eye opener when that was said. The one attorney, he's talking about the NFL. He does work with the NFL and Tennessee Titans, and he was talking about the NFL in 1987 with their drug problems, but they've worked it out. Well, you collectively bargained your drug problems. You know, the amount of testing is determined by the Players Association. You know, and they're giving backgrounds on people, and so-and-so worked for Senator Mitchell. I'm like, well, Senator Mitchell, isn't he the guy who had 100 baseball players anonymously give urine samples, and then the 100 of the names get leaked out and might be costing some of them Hall of Fame inductions and things like that? It's just like, I don't, you know. I guess you're supposed to be real impressed with credentials and things like that, and sometimes I'm not. So I paid attention as best as I could. I tried to learn as much as I could while there, but here's a troublemaker.
you're on a... Yeah, so you got a couple of minutes.
Come on, sit down.
Listen, you can't. Eric Hamelbeck joins us, and you can't make yourself more disliked in these 10 minutes than you already are. So don't worry.
We'll be nice to you, Eric.
Yeah, I know you too.
Well, these are the friendly confines.
Exactly.
Your name was just invoked, and your incredulousness over the prospect of Heisa arbitrarily superseding longstanding agreements that have been in place for decades.
Yes, Steve, and I've had, you know, even offline conversations with Dick. I mean, it's been a very frustrating process. Again, I, from a simplistic standpoint, what we've seen from the USADA regulations is a nuclear bomb dropped on the model rules that all of us have worked extremely hard on. I'm not going to say that there aren't some concerns or issues or things that should be changed, but if you look at it from a simplistic standpoint, USADA and the authority could have walked in, adopted the model rules at whatever jurisdiction they thought was best, and said this will be the standard July 2nd, 2022, and then we'll begin to tweak, right? So, again, if you look at what all of us feel like has been concerning, they're not addressing that. You know, maybe a little bit on the laboratory side, but looking at what is the problem, what have people complained about? Lack of uniformity. Okay, I get that, but nobody has ever complained about the rules. Nobody traditionally has really had issues with the thresholds. What have we had issues with? Environmental contamination, inadvertent transfer, defining screening limits. Those issues may or may not be being addressed at all. But to blow up the rules, start from scratch, and try to put a circle into a square peg of human rules in the equine world doesn't make sense. And it's very frustrating. And to come here with the expectation of taking off my HBPA hat, with the expectation of, okay, you've told us our industry is bad, how are we going to fix it? And really, we just come away from the panels with more questions. And you know, I did take a stand and asked, I thought, some weeded questions yesterday. And I'm sorry, it's well beyond the time of people chalking it up to the devil's in the details. It's time to know the damn details. It's time. Whether we're talking about the funding, whether we're talking about just the sheer fact that there's no mention of therapeutic levels, therapeutic medications. You know, we had a half-hearted answer yesterday from this Dr. Muir.
They're getting close, Eric.
Yeah, they're getting close, as if all of the research that we've done for how many years is not relevant. And it's beyond frustrating. But as I just said to a friend of mine, Andrew, I just said, well, I'm just going to keep putting the bricks on my I told you so wall.
Well, and to me, if we go back to the release of that first version of the rules,
the safety rules,
that came out, and at that point I had Alan Foreman mm-hmm. and Matt Hegarty on a Monday and a Wednesday, and it became immediately apparent, Alan had, who had been trying to influence the way in which this was going to, be handled. It became obvious, and it was further discussed with Alan on Monday. He now has got pronounced doubts, and his after trying to be a good soldier and lead THA and say we're going to have to make this work. Now it's obvious that Alan the reservations, and he is not alone. We understand the Thoroughbred Safety Coalition is absolutely turning against this, mm-hmm. and I wrote you a text a couple of weeks ago where I said, there's that famous saying, where do I go to get my, my reputation back? Right. Where does Eric Hamelbeck go for thank you for, pushing forward with the legal challenge?
Yes.
And the legal challenge, that's another thing. Mm-hmm. Alan has said, and
yeah, I did hear that.
He's about as good an authority for
legal side. Yeah, on all fronts, Alan is, but yeah.
And he now believes that worm is turning. Yeah. So
I want to make sure everybody does continue to realize the very first press release that went out when we filed the lawsuits in March, and I think it's now coming to fruition, is, look, you can call us what you want. You can call Eric an obstructionist, whatever. It doesn't matter. But at the end of the day, due process matters. And if we are defining this act as the rules to follow, then it is my charge to make sure it's going to be upheld in court. We need to make sure it's constitutional. And I used the example early on, if in August of 2022 there was a finding, an adverse analytical finding, and a very good, strong defense attorney, that's the first thing they're going to do is challenge the act, period. And so by doing our due process, doing our due diligence, if the lawsuits all fail, then at least I know in my heart we found out for sure it's constitutional, and we're going to do what we can and we always will abide by the rules, but we're going to do what we can to make sure it goes forward in a good way. So that's the thing for me. I do think that a lot of people still say, you just filed it because of LASIX, or you just filed it because you didn't support it. You got to get in line. And I have stolen a line from Alan. Have you read it? Have you read the, at first was, have you read the bill? And second now is,
Nobody read the bill. Nobody read the bill. It was 32,000 pages.
Well, the
omnibus
bill.
Yeah,
the omnibus package.
It was buried in the middle of the night.
Yeah. Now it moves and shifts to, have you read these the safety regulations that came out, the very first grouping of anything that we saw publicly? I turned and looked at, actually Deborah, my wife, was sitting next to me as I'm reading them, and I'm saying, boy, there was no racetrack that approved this going out, because the racetrack was shall do this, shall do that, shall do this. And then, some of the ridiculous things that were put in there specifically the 1 to 1.6 ratio on claiming races, which,
that has been
gone.
That's
it's
been
gone now. But, you know, here's the way I see it, Steve. That is gone, correct. The development of the safety officer, that was defined and released. Okay, that's the point I want you to know. It was released, and they put in black and white, if your racetrack doesn't host a graded stake, we encourage you to have a safety officer. Now, that's gone, right? It's gone. But in my mind, there's somebody that put these together, allowed it to be released, and they just told you that in their mind, the horse racing at Finger Lakes is not as important as the horse racing at Belmont Park. Because they created in black and white that segregated line on class warfare that we've all said is there. Now it's gone, and I appreciate it. And organically, there was a huge uproar about that. You know, but it's gone. But I still say, mentally, somebody thought that was okay. And those people are still there.
Well, and that's the underlying concern is that you've got to pull a line that Dick can appreciate, the famous Albany smoke-filled room.
Yeah.
Three men in a room, or you know, that are just you know, essentially you know, with certainly one of them being Stewart, just arbitrarily trying to, and you said segregate. That's, we've been saying this from day one.
Yeah, you have always preached that on your show, that, you know, the Lasix issue was a class divide issue, and you've been very vocal, and we appreciate your support from the standpoint of, you know, no matter what you see in the press and no matter what trash is now being put out there for Medina Spirit, you know, this is not an industry filled with doping. Have we had adverse analytical findings? Absolutely. But the fact that nobody in those panels quoted, for me, which is very important, 99.48% of all races in the United States occur without a fatality, right? 260,000+ biological samples, and we had less than 1%. So, in less than 1% adverse analytical findings. So, you know, it's a catch-22 when I hear folks say, well, we can't maintain status quo. That's BS, in my opinion, because if you look at the facts, if you look at not the headlines in Spin and New York Magazine, or, you know, all the periodicals that are trashing horse racing, they're doing that based on a public perception of folks that don't want there to be horse racing, period. And I, look, everybody's
that's agenda,
entitled,
an agenda
it's
driven,
agenda driven. But you know, to continue to hear that we're not doing a good job, in my opinion, is not really following the facts. Do we need to do things better? Absolutely, but there's not an industry out there that can deny that. They everybody needs to do stuff better in this day and age.
Listening to when they had the Zoom and they had a slide up with the flow chart of you get a test, if it's positive, it flows here, negative goes there, and then appeal process and national stewards looking at this stuff, excuse me. And I swear I heard them say that you could have a positive, or whatever they're calling it, an adverse. I call it positive. Have a positive. And you appeal, and you negotiate something, and then you accept the penalty. Somewhere else could get a different steward for the same positive and have an entirely different outcome, which is, I thought we were trying to get to the point
uniformity,
where...
Uniformity, right. That's not the definition of uniformity.
Yeah, I thought we were trying to get to, well, you know, in all these states, these are all levels that you're going to generate a positive on, or if you get caught, these are the punishments, and it's going to be consistent and everything else. And I got out of that. That's no consistent, not no consistent, because they certainly didn't move forward.
I talked to Ed Martin yesterday, and I don't know. We're going to run out of time today to get Ed in. And Ed talked about the way in which the regulators and they've basically put together a framework oblivious to what they're going to, how they're going to have to interact with state regulators, to the point where the regulators can opt out. What exactly do they think they're going to do at that point? It's going to be interesting to see, any of the HISA personnel, showing up at a racetrack during a meet to do licensing of backstretch workers.
Exactly.
Listen, as far as I'm concerned, this is tremendous. The overreach attempt here assures disaster. So if that's the way they want to proceed, then have at it, Haas,
right.
Because you're absolutely going about this completely wrong. And basically, it's a sneering, insulting approach that says you're all a bunch of miscreants, you're all pathetic, and we're going to fix it for you. Yeah. There's somebody else who came into the national scene with I alone can fix it. and there's a name for that in historical proportion. Right. It's a fascist approach, and they're going to fail. Period. Either legally or in execution.
Well, just real quick, and I can't speak for Ed Martin and the ARCI and the commissioners, but I know that
he's rolling his eyes at the thing.
The thing that went through pretty quickly and wasn't addressed much, that was a big bombshell yesterday, that USADA is not going to take over race day testing until now, 2023. And they're going to do that in a collaboration with the racing commissions. But once again, the racing commissions haven't been made privy to any of this. They had no idea that statement was going to be made. And for us, once again, we're just looking at the non-transparency of how this has gone about.
Yeah.
The multitude of drafts that have been put up on their website, we appreciate being able to access them. But I think on Monday the 29th, there were three that were uploaded. Now, were they uploaded with red lines so you know what was changed? No, I don't have a staff that I can go through every version and try to figure out what was changed and then make my comments. That again leads to frustrating non-transparency when I think that hiring a communications person simple enough early on would have benefited them, because at this point they've really generated a lot of fear in the industry.
Did you hear at the end Mike Campbell get up in the last panel?
I did.
Oh, I did not.
Fantastic.
Yeah, there were a couple of comments from the racetrack operators against Lasix, and I thought Mike got up and defended, again, from a horseman standpoint, but also a science standpoint, the utilization of Lasix. And on race day, when it's properly... has been researched to have 4 hours out.
Yeah. But he gave examples of horses that he's had recently, 250,000, 190,000 two-year-olds that have bled, basically ruined. And Craig Fravel says, I don't really go into horse stalls and whatever. Yeah. And I'm like, well, you voted for it.
Yeah.
Well, you're on the board of directors of
horses stalls. They'd be surprised to see them at an actual racetrack.
We have been very concerned, and this hasn't changed from the very first set of rules that have come out, is this attempt, which I called probably 3 years ago when they really started doing the abolishment of Lasix. They're trying to change the semantics of EIPH and define bled as only epistaxis. And that's a very concerning thing for us when you look at the definition.
Well, they're going to be veterinarians, too.
Well, right? Exactly. But where's the AAEP? I have to ask that question. But when you look at the definition of bled, they only talk about blood from the nostril, or they say both nostrils. So anything that is a 1, 2, or 3 that can be, from a kid growing up on the racetrack in Louisiana, lung infections are what stopped them. It wasn't epistaxis. If they survived epistaxis, they were better off. It's the blood that stays in the lungs, develop lung infections. You go down the shed row with three horses that have tubes coming out there, you know, lungs and draining. So, you know, anecdotally, again, we know of several horses that have been retired prematurely because they bled. But now we don't know that, you know, that data that was talked about by Craig, that's been hidden. We know where it is, but we don't know. You know, I've had prominent trainers try to encourage me to get the data, and that's going to be kind of a mission after the first of the year. But this semantic changing of bled to fit a narrative of, oh, well, nothing's coming out the nose, that's not fair. It's not fair to the horse, and it's certainly not fair to the owners.
But we're doing a study.
Yeah.
So
well, and that was another point that I made.
After they already made the changes. Yeah.
Where's the Stronach Group study that they buried because they didn't like the results?
Didn't like the results, yeah. That's certainly out there. So yeah, I appreciate the time, and I'm going to keep fighting, and I feel as if, you know, people are understanding why, you know, you can call it foresight, you can call it a good move by our board of directors, but obviously we saw concerns that now people are really realizing. And that's not to say, especially you two sitting at the table and others, there's a lot of people that saw it. We had the wherewithal to file the lawsuit and then work hard to get other states to do something similar, which they did. I can't talk a lot about the lawsuit.
I was going, all right, yeah. do we have any idea of a hearing?
Unfortunately, at this point, we do not have a hearing date for either lawsuit, to my knowledge. Nothing.
All right. Well, they do, the court system take into consideration the, you know, the timing elements of the what's involved.
We have communicated that in particular to our suit. Yes, the timing of how things are moving, date or deadlines as to when things are implemented. We've kept them abreast of that. Yes.
Well, to quote Tom Cruise in Rain Man, I want it firm and I want it early.
That's right.
That's right. Eric Hamelbeck, always a pleasure.
Thank you very much for snagging me. It's always an honor to sit next to Dick Powell, though, I will tell you that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Hammer swinging back through. And are you ready? You kick off? They're circling? The Rainbow Six going off in the next 10 minutes? Hammer, well, tell you what, let's take the break here. We're going to get Pat McKenna. Dick, stay here for a minute, okay. And because I'm going to run down the hall a coffee break in the other direction. All right, stay with us. We're our only break of the morning, and then I at noon, noon Eastern, at 10 here, I've got to get to that. I've got a 1 o'clock flight back to Albany that I've got to get to Phoenix for. So I'm going to, you know, there's just enough, but not a lot of leeway.
Exactly.
But not a lot of leeway. All right. So let's take a break here. Pat McKenna is going to join us. There's a hearing in Albany, and interested for Dick's feedback too. 11 o'clock. And Pat will tell us what's going on. He's just arrived at the State House, and I wanted to get him on with this. All right, and we've got Dan Silver from Roberts. The students are all inside right now in a session, so we'll hopefully get them. You know, in the last hour, I've got to talk to them. Frank Hoff and Nick Tamaro as well. Frank from Sam Houston, and Nick is the new voice of Sam Houston, as you know. Chris Katulak too from Fauner Park. All right, back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them, is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Mr. Kringle is soon going to jingle.
Well, I want to get you guys, I want to get a few students in, too. All right?
Everybody's waiting for the man.
Tell you what, well, I'm only here till 11, so sit down for a second. All right, here we go.
It's not a stay full, it's not going to stay full. He's got stuff to drop at every stop of the way. Everybody's waiting for the man with the bag. Christmas is coming
there we go.
Again.
The great K-Star, Dick.
Oh. With the answer to the prayers.
I told you, my one and only favorite Christmas joke.
Yeah?
Red Fox. We were so poor. My father would go outside to Christmas Eve, fire a gun, come back in and say, Santa Claus just committed suicide.
That's not funny. You guys, it's not that. It's awful.
It is when Red Fox tells
me. Well, that's true. That's true. Hey, we got a great window here. I'm waiting for Pat McKenna to park the car at the State House in Albany.